Can you hear me?
I can hear you. Can you hear me?
Yep. Okay.
Okay.
That's great.
Good.
All right. So let's get started. So
husband's on the other line, by the way.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah.
Okay, so thanks to both of you for taking the time to speak with us today. Just for our listeners, Marty and Martha Roth are members of Independent Jewish Voices and wrote an opinion piece in the Georgia Strait on July 20th in which they discuss growing up during the anti-Semitism of World War II and how that compares with anti-Semitism today. Thanks for taking the time to speak with us,
sure.
Marty and Martha Roth. Could you tell us a bit about yourself and why you wrote the piece in the Georgia Strait?
Well, do you want to go first, honey?
On Tuesday, July 23rd, Vancouver City Council voted on a motion tabled by NPA Councillor Sarah Kirby Young. This motion was titled Combating Anti-Semitism in Vancouver. It proposed that the city adopt the International Holocaust Remembrance Association's non-legally binding working definition of anti-Semitism. This definition considers criticism of the state of Israel anti-Semitic.
Well, we wrote the piece for the Georgia Strait because we're absolutely outraged by this international campaign to get governments, provinces, cities to accept the definition of anti-Semitism, which makes criticism of Israel a prime example of anti-Semitism.
Yeah, I mean, it's
Looney Tunes.
Criminalizing free speech, basically.
After a close 6-5 vote, the motion was referred to an ethnocultural equity advisory committee. The goal of this committee is to provide recommendations on how the city can increase action on ending all forms of hatred and racism, including anti-Semitism.
So, okay, let's go back, go into your piece then. In your straight piece, you wrote, "As Canadians who lived through Second World War, we are extremely sensitive to anti-Semitism. But what disturbs us almost as much as anti-Semitism itself are the manufactured incidents of anti-Semitism and the inflated fear of anti-Semitism that have been increasing of late, often at the expense of our Muslim fellow citizens. Can you explain why, as you write, manufactured incidents of anti-Semitism often come at the expense of other marginalized communities?"
You want to go ahead, Martha?
No, you do that.
Today, B'nai B'rith keeps pumping out reports that says anti-Semitism is on the rise, but it lists simply everything that's reported to it, and there's no follow-up. Somebody calls in and says, this happened to me, and I think it was anti-Semitic. It goes down on the list.
Yeah, right. Right, and it can be, you know, graffiti on a synagogue wall, or it can be...
It can be a swastika in the snow.
Right. Or it can be an insult hurled at someone in the course of an argument. As Marty says, we're talking about B'nai B'rith because it has part of its organization is something called the Anti-Defamation League, which has as its brief the scotching of anti-Semitic utterances and phenomena. So every swastika in the snow or graffiti on a synagogue wall or insult thrown in the course of an argument gets reported to the Anti-Defamation League, and they tabulate them and then every month issue a report.
Councillor Kirby Young's motion aligns with B'nai B'rith reports. Stats listed in the motion include that Statistics Canada reports that members of the Jewish community are the most frequently targeted ethnocultural group when it comes to police-reported hate crimes. The motion also cites that, as of June 2019, the Vancouver Police Department Hate Crimes Unit reported that the Jewish community were the most targeted group when it came to hate crimes in the city. But what is a hate crime, and how is it counted?
Can you tell me what specifically constitutes a hate crime?
Sure. So a hate crime is a criminal violation, meaning that it's a violation that meets the threshold in the Criminal Code of Canada.
That's Warren Silver from Stats Canada.
That is motivated by hate or bias towards somebody because of their being part of an identifiable group. So it has to have those three parts. One, it has to be a criminal incident. Two, it has to be motivated by hate. And three, it's motivated by hatred of an identifiable group.
Warren says that a lot of hate crime reporting comes down to the relationship local police establish with different ethnocultural groups.
So if we look at Vancouver, for example, Vancouver has a dedicated hate crime unit. They also work with the BC hate crime team. And so the Vancouver police, I know, are very engaged working with the Jewish community, with the Muslim community, with the GLBT community. Those things, building up trust and working with communities, will lead to higher reporting. So when you look at a table and you see where the higher numbers are, it doesn't necessarily mean that there's more hate crimes occurring there. It could mean that there is more reporting going on.
So in terms of hate crimes that were reported in Vancouver, Warren gives a couple stats.
The largest proportion of the race ethnicity hate crimes were targeting the South Asian population. The largest number of the religious hate crimes targeted the Jewish population, 38 out of 48 of those incidents.
38 out of 48 religious-based hate crimes that are reported in Vancouver are directed towards Jewish people. We reached out to hate crime specialist Dr. Barbara Perry to figure out why that number is so high.
I'm Barb Perry. I am the director of the Center on Hate, Bias, and Extremism at Ontario Tech University, where I'm also a professor in social science and humanities.
So my colleague who spoke with Stats Canada yesterday was told that two-thirds of hate crimes go unreported in Canada. Could you explain why that is?
I think there are a number of reasons, and I would actually say that two-thirds is probably being quite generous. I think it's probably closer to 15 or 20%, that only about 15 to 20% that are reported. But regardless, there are a number of reasons. And sometimes it's simply that the offense is, of a lower order and people don't think it's worth reporting. So if it's vandalism or, doesn't affect them directly, so it's graffiti, on the street, doesn't affect anyone, as an individual, they may think it's not any of their business. So those are, sort of very practical reasons. But there's also, for some communities in particular, sort of a distrust for law enforcement. So they're not willing to engage with law enforcement, where there's been, whether it's, sort of at the historical level or whether it's at the very immediate local level, if there's been an uneasy relationship between law enforcement and, say, the LGBTQ community or the Muslim community, then, people are not going to willingly engage law enforcement, even to report their own victimization.
As you mentioned, a few demographics who might have a distrustful relationship with the police for a variety of reasons you listed, such as the LGBTQ plus community, maybe Muslims, the Black community in Canada. So we have,
Indigenous communities, for sure.
Indigenous communities, absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely. So when Stats Canada is putting out numbers on hate crimes, how accurate are they if so many people aren't reporting?
Yeah, I think that they're not very accurate, and I think law enforcement are the first to acknowledge that. They are a dramatic underrepresentation. So if we look at the general social survey, which is an annual survey, hate crime questions aren't asked every year, but on some years, there are questions there about hate crime, and there's an incredible gap between the number that are reported in that national survey and what's reported to police. So we know that gap is there, so we know that it is dramatically underrepresented. But I should still say that because there's not a great deal of difference year to year in terms of how it's then recorded, it at least gives us some indication about trends, whether it's relatively even or whether it's increased, especially now. In the first few years, police were just getting up to speed on how to identify hate crime. The communities were just beginning to, recognize that such a thing existed and was reportable. So I would say probably in the last 5 or 6 years that there's at least some level of consistency in reporting and recording. So I think we can be a little more confident about trends even if not absolute numbers.
Right. So Stats Canada told us that hate crimes are defined by three things. One, a criminal incident. Two, something motivated by hate. And three, mm-hmm. that hate has to be towards an identifiable group. So within this framework, I'm still wondering how much room there is for subjectivity when determining if something is a hate crime.
Yeah, because on any one of those levels, it's very possible to interpret differently. And, mm-hmm. I would say that that last piece, an identifiable group, is sort of a misinterpretation, because the legislation actually says, or any other identifiable group. So it lists, concrete identity categories like, race, gender, identity, sexual orientation, et cetera, but then says, or any other similar group. So that, if there were groups like in the UK, there's a lot of research on, goth subcultures being targeted. If we have incidents there, the argument could be made that that's also a protected group because of that similar history of marginalization and vilification. So that said, there's lots of room in all of these in terms of maybe not so much the criminal incident, obviously, although even at that level, law enforcement might question whether someone was really assaulted, or were they just, victims of verbal assault instead. So minimizing that harm. But it's really the hate motivation and the bias motivation that really throws these issues into question, because law enforcement might say, well, it occurred in the midst or in the context of another dispute. It had nothing to do with race, but racial slurs were used, so it wasn't motivated by hate. That was secondary. So, there is lots of room for interpretation in there. And right. Having talked to a lot of people in targeted communities, they often feel as if that hate motivation is downplayed by law enforcement, that they're being too sensitive, that they were overreacting to the incident, for example.
Right. And so in this case, the reason I'm calling you is because of the motion I mentioned at the beginning to adopt a definition of anti-Semitism that was created by the International Holocaust Remembrance Alliance, which includes criticism of Israel as being part of anti-Semitism. So, for example, when someone is determining, like a police officer is determining whether a report is a hate crime, would there be subjectivity there for that officer to make a call on whether someone criticizing, for example, Israel, like burning an Israeli flag, would be considered actually a hate crime towards Jewish Canadians?
Oh, absolutely, because that also, I think, requires a certain awareness or a certain amount of knowledge about the politics of the Middle East, about, what the impact of those kinds of statements might be on the Jewish community. So it's not just about, subjective interpretation. It's about not really having the knowledge or the awareness to make the appropriate determination there, to not understand how that how certain speech acts might actually be interpreted as anti-Semitic.
Right. And then, so another thing Stats Canada mentioned, which was interesting, is that in areas, metropolitan areas like Vancouver that have diverse communities, lots of immigrants, lots of just a diversity of different types of people, different religions, different ethnicities, police often actually do more active outreach to those communities to build relationships and actually sort of open up lines for hate crimes to be reported. But again, this seems like there's possibly a lot of subjectivity here, depending on who the police have built relationships mm-hmm. with. So like mm-hmm. when I look at the number that was given to us, that 38 out of 48 religion-based hate crimes in Vancouver were directed towards Jewish Canadians, I'm just wondering like how much that could be based on how strong of a relationship is built between the VPD and Jewish groups in the city.
Yeah, and there's a great deal of variability across services in terms of how much outreach they do, and as you say, which communities they engage with. And I think, historically that there has been a relatively good relationship between law enforcement and other security agencies and the Jewish community, much less so than with the Muslim community, for example, which is the next. And nationally, they were actually very close this year in terms of their victimization. I think that, yeah, absolutely there. And it's not just that there's police outreach, there's also just a different level of comfort on the part of the Jewish community very often in approaching the state and its agents, such as law enforcement.
So there's a ton of subjectivity when it comes to reporting hate crimes. We reached out to the Vancouver Police Department numerous times for comment on their process of recording and assessing hate crimes, and were eventually told they weren't free to talk anytime this week. The BC Civil Liberties Association, however, came out in opposition to the International Holocaust Remembrance Association's definition of antisemitism, proposed to be adopted by Councillor Kirby Young's motion. They're concerned about how hate crimes are counted, but they're also concerned that the IHRA definition includes criticism of Israel as anti-Semitism.
So on the last point about the recent move by the city council to introduce a motion to adopt the IHRA definition of anti-Semitism, which has already been approved at the federal level, the BC Civil Liberties Association had a response, which included the following line: the definition conflates critiques of the state of Israel with anti-Semitism. Could you give our listeners an example of how this definition might conflate criticism of Israel with criticism of Judaism?
Yes.
That's Megan McDermott, a lawyer with the BC Civil Liberties Association.
The thing with this definition is that if you look at it on its face, it seems pretty benign. However, what's not immediately apparent to the average reader or just citizen hearing about this debate is that in the International Holocaust Remembrance Association's definition of it, they then provide a number of examples of how this definition is to be interpreted. And when I looked at this motion for Vancouver, I looked to see if it referenced those examples, and it does.
Some of the examples provided with the IHRA definition include denying the Jewish people the right to self-determination example by claiming the existence of the State of Israel is a racist endeavor, and applying double standards by requiring of it a behavior not expected or demanded of any other democratic nation.
It's just so problematic to link critique of a state's actions with this notion that whoever's critiquing that state's actions also has hatred for a particular group of people, namely Jewish people. I mean, there are some Islamic nations on earth right now, like Iran, for instance, and there's no conflating criticism of Iran in the anti-hate policy with Islamophobia. No other definition that I know of is incorporating that kind of like political critique into this sense of racism or prejudice.
In the end, this definition, which has been referred to committee by the City of Vancouver, what it comes down to for Marty and Martha Roth is that anti-Semitism, as defined as critique of Israel, is a way of distracting from discrimination directed towards other groups of marginalized folks.
So how does this come at the expense of other marginalized communities?
Marty?
Muslims are killed.
That's right.
First Nations people suffer discrimination physically, and it's very severe. Black communities are targeted in ways the Jewish communities couldn't dream of being targeted.
Right. First Nations communities don't have drinkable water. Their children don't have schools to go to. When we concentrate on the relatively innocuous insults given to a privileged group, which is what Jews in Canada are at this moment, it comes at the expense of these other groups.
In addition to everything else we've said, we are insisting that this definition of anti-Semitism has less to do with anti-Semitism than it has to do with criticism of a foreign state, the State of Israel.
Thank you for listening. This piece was reported by Armand Reyna and myself, Alex DeBoer. Editing by myself, Alex DeBoer. Thanks to everyone who gave their time to speak with us. The songs you heard were Bitters and True Blue Sky by Blue Dot Sessions.